Hey everybody, it's the Yucca Lady. You're listening to You Can't Eat the Sunshine.
Gail, we're in this wonderful office you have in Monrovia, and I wanted to talk to you about car culture and engine building and aerospace. So that's, I think for the next 15 minutes or so, we're gonna try and tie these things pretty closely to the city of Maywood. And we'll see where that goes. I'd like for you, first of all, to introduce yourself.
I'm Gail Banks, and I'm a gearhead.
God bless you. Gail.
There's no 12-step program for me.
I want to start basically at the intersection of Slauson and Atlantic, just actually a few blocks west of Slauson and Atlantic at Canning Hardware. This is a hardware store that's still there. And by starting at Canning Hardware, I want to go in two directions. I want to get us to early Los Angeles auto shows, and I want you to flesh out the narrative of the Trident Car Club. And that's going to involve talking about Richard Canning and some really important engine builders. Yes. So take it away.
All right. Canning Hardware, of course, on Slauson in Maywood. Gary Canning, a great car enthusiast, rodder, customizer type of individual, as we all were, because the automobile at the time, really predating World War II, but after World War II, was a social tool. And customizing your automobile might be seen as status if someone was trying to impress someone of the female persuasion. And some, we used to say, you know, you've got two ways of creating that impression. One was the styling of the automobile, making it uniquely yours, and one was the sound of the automobile, which we were convinced that the women's ears were directly connected to their sexual center. So throwing a rev, as it was called, hearing those loud pipes turned heads, for better or for worse. Canning was kind of the spiritual leader here. He was in a business family. A lot of us were the sons of blue collar and daughters of blue collar workers, Maywood, Southgate, Huntington Park, Linwood, all of those being kind of blue collar neighborhoods. The workers in those neighborhoods were in the trades. It could be welding, machining, etc., aerospace later on. And a lot of hot rods came part by part out of aerospace factories in lunchboxes.
I believe the term for that is a G-job.
Yeah, G-jobs, exactly. Of course, you couldn't bring the whole car out in your lunch pail, but you could bring critical elements that had been beautifully machined on your brakes or whatever during the day. Canning Hardware, kind of a center for all of this, because you bought things, nuts, bolts, critical elements for your hot rod at Canning Hardware. There were others. There are other hardware stores, some of which still exist, just like Canning, that had a high automotive impact. A car club was formed around Canning's love of the automobile and wanting to get together with all the other guys, and that was the Trident's Car Club. I can't tell you the date of formation, but I can tell you it was peopled by people who were into customs and people who were into what I call hot rods. Of course, you can combine the two in one vehicle. You can have a really fast custom or a really good-looking hot rod. So
I'm gonna interrupt you. I want you to tell us the definition of high performance.
Well, high performance, I always put it on the horsepower scale. High performance, of course, is the ability to accelerate rapidly or go very fast. My thing was always, I never thought about the brakes. So my motto became full throttle, no brakes. High performance is, to quantify high performance, when you don't have enough power until you have enough power to scare yourself.
So we're at the Trident Car Club. Start talking about the difference between the hot rod and the custom job.
Yeah. The custom guys like the sound. A lot of customs at the time were either flathead Ford V8 powered or inline Chevy 6 powered. There's a unique sound to both of those engines. The guys with the inline Chevy 6 did what was called a split exhaust manifold, which I actually heard yesterday. Some guy with a customized truck from back in the day. And I went, boy, here I go right back to the early 50s. It's the sweetest thing you've ever heard. But the question again was, the difference between? I've lost the question is my problem.
Oh, so you had guys that were interested in building hot rods and guys that were interested in cars that looked good.
Yeah.
So basically what I want to do is split us. So later in another podcast, we can talk about Ed Roth and Barris and the skin. But now I want to talk about the engine builders.
Yeah.
And the engine builders centered around Canning Hardware.
Okay. The engine builders centered around Canning Hardware. One very close to him, Fritz Voigt. Fritz Voigt is still with us in his 80s. He did a lot with Mickey Thompson. Mickey Thompson did not live in that exact area. He's from Alhambra and worked in the printing group at the Los Angeles Times. Mickey Thompson was all about going very, very fast. And Fritz was his engine builder, chief mechanic, crew chief, and they did a lot together. Keith Black. Keith Black built the Chrysler Hemi early on and formed the platform for what today is the top fuel dragster engine, is an outgrowth of Keith Black's efforts at the time. Keith Black his father lived directly across from Jack Inglis' parents. Jack Inglis was a Trident. And I recall having meetings at the Inglis house and seeing Keith wrestling Chryslers around on the floor of his dad's garage across the street. Later, his dad built a shop for him on Atlantic Avenue near Tweedy. That became the commercial operation. At the time, I was wrestling engines around on my dad's garage floor as well. And my first operation was at Atlantic and Imperial in Linwood, very, very close to George Barris and his brother, who were customizing cars in the area. Keith became the dean of drag racing, both in boats and in automobiles. And on occasion, I had the distinction of actually beating him. But it was rare. I was younger than Keith, and he was more knowledgeable. But I did get him one time in a hydroplane race at Long Beach Marine Stadium. So this whole thing, though, with Canning led to a first formal custom car and hot rod autorama at the Pan Pacific Auditorium, where it was, as I recall, for a number of years. we didn't have the LA Convention Center. And I got to tell you, the Pan Pacific Auditorium was on the Gilmore Adobe property.
Right, yeah, near Farmer's Market, right.
Yeah. But, the only thing that's still there is remnants of Farmer's Market. But Gilmore Stadium was there,
right,
and there was a ballpark there, and the Pan Pacific, a beautiful Art Deco piece. I really miss that architecture, to tell you the truth. So this is where we all had a contest. This is why a lot of people built to the level that they did to win that event. The equivalent today is a Detroit Autorama, and the prize is called the Riddler, which, with a custom 55 T-Bird and one of my twin-turbo 1150-horse engines, I had the distinction of winning this year.
Mazel tov. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So the crime continues.
So we have on one hand with hot rodders and customizers.
Yes.
People interested in the skin and people interested in the horsepower. Mm-hmm. Pushing automotive culture in Los Angeles. And that brings us to these early LA Autorama shows, which of course are the birthplace of car culture in Los Angeles,
yes,
which is so fundamental. I want to wrap this up. We've mentioned aerospace. We mentioned a G-job very briefly. I want you, let's move a little east. Let's go back to the old, to Ford used parts, and talk about salvaging auto parts and reinventing them. And I was hoping you could tell us about how Crane and Gars got started. They bought that Ford manufacturing, cylinder head manufacturing plant, and they started their work, and all the work that came out of that, the Karger wheel, and just how taking automotive manufacturing and aerospace manufacturing and pumping that back into car culture. So we really have a full circle of all the stuff going on in South Los Angeles and getting put into what's on the street and what people see.
Yeah, the speed equipment industry, of course, you've got two things that were going on here. Probably the most dominant thing in my mind is Ford Parts Obsolete, that started God knows when, I believe after World War II, but possibly before World War II. And this was a nexus of Ford speed equipment, cylinder heads for the Model A, the Model T four-cylinder, the Model A four-cylinder, which was the first engine I ever hot-rodded.
This Ford Parts Obsolete, that was at the corner of the old Goodyear blimp airfield and hangar. Basically, at Slauson and Central and Gage.
Yeah, quite a large property. A lot of railroad ran into that blimp property. I believe the blimp hangars are now gone, but they were imposing in their size. Bell Auto Parts was another area in the area. And the Kregar head, which ended up being named, manufactured and merchandised under a variety of names, became one of the dominant four-cylinder Ford hot rod parts. So.
And then Karger then came out just of the many things they did, and I want to wrap up with this, their aluminum wheel, the the Krager wheel. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So just let's wrap up with that, and the Krager wheel is important because you have this strong tradition of machine shops in the area. You have aerospace, mm-hmm, lightweight aluminum alloys. Mm-hmm. I mean, so this is just sort of. Let's wrap up all these loose threads and bring it together with this wonderful aluminum wheel that changed the way I think cars looked.
Yeah, the Krager wheel is still produced to this day, It's still very popular, and it almost never happened. A gentleman by the name of Jot Horn had a speed equipment company, Horn Speed Equipment, and he raced at El Mirage, Dry Lake, and Bonneville. And Jot worked at Bell Auto Parts. He came up with the idea for the wheel, and the management, they weren't too interested. He pushed for about a year. He drew the first wheel himself. This is a guy who worked the counter at Bell Auto Parts and was a pattern maker as well for aluminum castings. He drew it up, and finally they decided, okay, go ahead and make the patterns. We're going to make the wheel. And that was it. He was also a mentor to me, Jot Horn, who lives today, and I hope he's still alive. I have a World War II Navy veteran's hat from Navy Special Forces to present to Jot Horn. He lives in Oakhurst, California.
Wow. That's fantastic. So I think that's wrapped up all of our threads. We talked about this before we started talking, just in passing, because he's such a iconic figure for even the lay public, those not involved in high performance or hot rodding. Mm-hmm. Ed Big Daddy Roth, do you just want to mention where his shop was in relation to canning hardware? Because it is of some interest.
Yes, Ed's shop was within about a block of canning hardware on the same street. The first thing I admired about Ed Roth, and this can continue at a later date, but he had a refrigerator inside the sheet metal wall of his shop, and many times he worked outdoors on the vehicles he built. And he had punched through the back wall of the refrigerator and through the wall of the shop, and he had a beer keg in the refrigerator and tap on the outside wall so he could refill his glass without having to go into the shop. Now that's convenience and ingenuity.
That shop is still there. I'm going to keep leaving letters for the owners to let me in, and I'm going to go look for that.
Look for the hole in the wall. Go look for the hole in the wall.
Gail, God bless you. This has been a wonderful interview. I want to thank you for this wonderful glimpse into the world of speed and hot rodding and performance and aerospace. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let's do it again.